Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
A new high has been reached for the HDB resale market. You may have heard someone paid $1.5 million for a five-room design, build and sell scheme, the DBSS public housing flat. This was at 139A Lorong 1 Toa Payoh, so just around the corner from where we are broadcasting from here at SPH. That flat, that transaction, 1.5, well, to be exact, 1.56888. Sounds lucky, don't you think? It broke the record for the most expensive resale flat sold here in Singapore. So what is the state of the property market is what we're asking today. Just 3 months ago, actually, Morgan Stanley analysts said that there is potential for an end for Singapore's longest private home price rally that we've seen since the 1980s because of expectations of a slowdown in real estate in the market because of an imbalance between demand and supply and high stamp duties meant to deter foreign buyers, expected to, I should say, and expected also to deter public housing upgrades. So what does this leave us? If you're a new home buyer, you want to enter the market and you're thinking, should I wait until the Fed cuts those interest rates? Will it trickle down to my mortgage? How long is that going to take? Or should I enter the market? Because I think that property prices like COE prices are forever going to go higher. So we're going to clarify some common maybe mistakes that people tend to bring with them when they think about the property market, and also get the view of the gentleman in the studio. I've asked my friends from iQuadrant to join me. They're all about strategies for the property market. The last time they were here, they talked about their focus on finding below market value industrial properties. So I'm very happy to welcome back Benny Ong, CEO of iQuadrant. Good morning, Benny.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining me. And Ivan Chai is his co-founder and head of research at iQuadrant. Nice to meet you, Ivan.
Nice to meet you too.
All right, guys, let me know what you both think of the current state of the Singapore real estate market. Ivan, do you want to kick it off?
Sure. I think if you are talking about the Singapore real estate market, right, there's still room to grow definitely for prices, because I think one thing that we want to think about is always about costs. When it comes to like real estate, right, there's a land price cost and there's inflation on like raw material and labor costs.
Yep.
So with this, right, this means that there is what prices may be able to go lower, but it's not like all possible due to like costs.
Okay. Do you share the same view, Benny?
Yeah, I mean, we did the research. The whole idea about building a condo, it takes raw material, right? I mean, that's it, right? And if everything is getting expensive, there's just this bottom line that it cannot go surpass below. So the fact that it's already supported by a lot of factors like this, right, it shows the real estate market will not have this bubble effect that's happening in what people are saying, that, oh my God, Singapore property is going to be like bubble hour. So we don't see that happening. Yeah.
Okay, so what are some property trends that you are seeing shaping up that you're interested in looking at more closely?
I think if it comes to property trends, right, I think the one thing I look at is really about the interest rates. So when it comes to interest rate, right, if you're talking about fixed rates right now, it's about 3%.
Yep.
And if you're talking about floating, right, it's more than 3, it's like 4 plus.
Yeah.
This is not normal. So in a normal interest rate environment, right, the floating rate is lower than the fixed, because like if you want to have a stable, secure rate, right,
you normally pay more.
Yeah, you pay a
long
premium.
Run. Yeah.
Yeah, but now it's the inverse. This means that my opinion is that the banks are taking a view that interest rates will come down in the future. So with this, right, think about it like as a investor, right, what I get in terms of returns, right, is renter minus my interest, right? Mm-hmm. And if the interest is going down, right, this means I get a higher potential return.
Yeah.
And likewise for homeowners, that means if the interest rate goes down, right, this means that I'm able to hold on to the property better. And this means that there's potential for capital appreciation.
I think we look at the whole market right now, interestingly, over the last 2 weeks, new launches are not selling out. We're not seeing that whole queuing up. People are buying at frenzy, right? So market is actually getting soft in new launch, right? So I do not see price dropping, but I see opportunity for people starting to see developer pricing it way more friendlier, which is an exciting space for 2024.
The thing with interest rates, and that's a fair point, right, of property investors saying they're expecting interest rates to fall, so there's still going to be sort of demand that's fueling this market rally that we've seen. The thing is, we don't know how soon that'll translate. The Fed cuts rates, but how soon will it take for Singapore banks to follow suit when it comes to the major central banks, ECB and the Fed? So let's talk a little bit about new buyers. I can imagine somebody listening into this show. They're a new couple. They want to enter the market. They look at these rates, 4.6%. 4.7 for floating, 3% for, and that's the floor rate, it looks like, for fixed rates. And they're cautious. So what do you say to new buyers about when to enter the market if they're looking to enter this year? Is it a good year to get in?
Yeah, I think, we look at it in two segments. First, if you are looking at the resale market, right, I think that it's always a good time to get in, because when it comes to the resale market, right, it's really about a negotiation, right, between the buyers and sellers. So if I'm looking for something below market value, like for example industrial, like what we talked about in the past, right?
Yeah.
When we're looking at residential, it's also possible. So it's just important to trigger or to make the purchase, right, when we are able to buy it at undervalued prices.
So a lot of people use that stock market approach on real estate about timing.
Yeah.
Right. If you really understand about real estate market, time in market is more important.
Okay.
Thinking about collecting the renter, getting the principal to pay off, right? So I would say that if you can upgrade or you're buying for investment, you should move and keep upgrading as you go along the journey.
Mm. Interesting. With the high ABSD for foreigners, 60%, can you walk us through, I suppose, maybe the steps for all sorts of people if they're looking at investing in Singapore's real estate market?
I think that's a very, very interesting point. So in my point of view, right, if you are looking at ABSD of like 60% for foreigners, right, the question I'll ask myself, right, is this here to stay or is this a temporary measure? So my opinion is that right now, because of the limited availability of properties, right, our government is putting this cap with this 60% ABSD. But as we get more real estate in Singapore, right, I think it's actually better for some foreigners to own real estate in Singapore. And my take is that ABSD will come down. So with ABSD coming down, right, then the demand will go up for purchases.
Interesting. What are the areas that offer good price growth as you see it? Benny, did we talk about areas that offer great price growth in your opinion last time?
We did, but we can dive even deeper this time around. Right? I mean, we look at the gap between condo versus EC. You know, I think that really opened up a space for upgraders as well. A lot of people are not looking at resale EC. They're just waiting for their BTO, waiting for that new launch, new EC. Right? But I think they should be more open when it comes to buying property that are not a new, right? Because the whole market price is so different right now. We're talking about a new launch at 2,600 PSF. That is so extreme for people who are new to real estate, right? While we look at the EC, whereby you really have such a huge price point that I think the demand is all going to drive there. And that's just one of the key areas that will...
What's the price point for ECs right now? Do you
about
know?
1,400 plus per square feet.
1,400 plus. That's a resale,
the
right?
New launch.
New launch.
New
okay.
EC.
Yeah. So new did you say the resale was 2,000 plus?
The resale is also bottoming up at, like, I would say that we look at the down payment differences rather than the price. So you will see that someone would have paid close to $300,000 to $500,000 more to buy a condo private project versus an EC. Because when we look at Singapore real estate, PSF is subjective, but affordability is a key thing as well. When an upgrader comes into the market, they look at how much cash I have in the bank, right? And that cash alone doesn't help them to upgrade to a condo as much and easy. Yeah.
The cash alone does not help them upgrade easily.
It doesn't. Because we are talking about like $500,000. We're talking about like $700,000 over $1,000, right? Not a lot of people have those spare cash around to do such moves.
Okay, so why is the resale EC market attractive in your opinion?
In my opinion, right, if you're looking at the resale EC or private condominiums, right, to me they are pretty similar. So in terms of price point, right, they should also be pretty similar. But right now in the market, we are not seeing that. We are seeing like the EC to be priced like maybe 200 per square feet lower. So my take is that the gap will close as we realize this value.
Interesting. Is that the only area that you think is attractive to possibly new buyers right now?
Oh, so when I look at areas, right, I look at places with job creation. Oh, so why do I say that? You see, when I see places with job creation, right, this means that there'll be more demand for renting that area and more demand for people that want to stay in that area so that they can get to work faster. So with this higher demand, right, that means there'll be potential rental increase or capital appreciation or demand for buying. So with this, right, on to look at in terms of Singapore, where are the growth prospects? So with this, it's more like Paya Lebar Central, and look at Jurong Lake District, the One North area. Actually, I stay around that area, so I'm pretty familiar. So also, if you're looking at like areas like Punggol Digital District, right, I think that's a potential area for more job creation.
Interesting. And what about the north of Singapore? We're looking at infrastructure to link Singapore closer with our northern neighbours.
That's a very good point. I think that will be a plus for industrial, actually. So think about it. If you look at the RTS line, right, terminates at an area that has quite a number of industrial properties. So we can have a lot of friends coming in from Malaysia working at these factories and then going back in the evening.
Okay, really interesting. What can we look for if we are, what are some signs? Okay, so these are common questions that we often hear from people who want to buy property and they have a lot of, there's a lot of confusion around the process and they're wondering, am I overpaying for a particular property? What would you say to a listener wondering, are there any signs I can look at to say this property is overpriced?
If you're talking about the resale market, right, normally we will call for a valuation for the real estate itself. So normally we can check this in with our mortgage broker or our friend or our banker, right, on like what are the possible valuation, and based on this valuation, right, we can make a decision whether this is a fair value or undervalue. Another method, right, is to look at the past 6 months transaction within the project itself. So when we look at the project, right, how we look at it is like the bigger the size, the lower the per square feet, and the smaller the size, the higher the per square feet. But if you are able to spot something that's out of range, that means a small sized unit that is transacting at a lower per square feet, right, then that is where we see the opportunity is.
Isn't that a lagging indicator though, past 6 months, because the sales would have happened 3 months before that?
That's a very, very fair point. I see it as a lagging within the project itself. So I think when it comes to home stayers in private properties in Singapore, right, normally we look for the project we look for it in terms of the project. So if this is a project that I'm interested in, then we need the project. This is how I select a property for purchase.
Okay. The good thing about Singapore is that most of the thing can be accessed by those platforms like Property Guru. So they're just like 3 clicks away, which is very rare when it comes to overseas. There's no centralized platform, right? So I'll say 3 to 6 months, it's a relatively new movement when it comes to real estate transaction, because the transactions are slow. Right, we are not talking about monthly changes in real estate prices as well. When someone make a transaction, usually it's a 3 to 6 month period as well. So you are looking at a price point that is relatively stable if that's so. However, but if it comes to freehold, past transaction might not hold as well, because some of these freehold projects in East Coast, they're small ones. Maybe like in a year, there's like 0 transaction, or in 2, there's 1, right? So then that might not be the strongest point to reference to as well. But generally, if you just look at the map, the area of like Property Guru, right, just look at all the transaction point, so you can pretty much get a sense of every area, what are they transacting at.
Actually, I just had the guys from Property Guru in, and they were telling me about this new service that they actually offer. It's meant for businesses and REIT owners actually, but they also shared with me that this tool, an earlier version of it, is available to all property agents, which give agents a great indicator of what the asking price could be, because they crunch all the data of, you know, they have all the data, right, of what's out there and what people are asking, so this expected price as well. So that's really interesting. You could ask your agent for that. You know, so I'm sure all agents have that.
Amazing part about this data, like you're mentioning about lagging indicator, is that lagging indicator works relevantly well still in an interest rate environment that's high, because people can't really hold on to the real estate fast. They need to transact it fast because they want to sell. They might be feeling the pain of the mortgage,
which is now.
Yes, but when the interest rate start to get lower, in my opinion, those data might not stand, because a home buyer might be saying, hey, you know what, that's what the data suggests, but I want to sell it like 300k more, so I'm just going to hold on to it, right? And that's what we saw 3 years ago as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, people are just like, you know what, I can hold, doesn't matter,
because interest rates were low,
right? So there's a good understanding of data when it comes to the correlation with interest rate, because that does affect psychologically how people are fearful of selling the real estate. They want it fast, or they can have that power to really hold on to it.
Yeah. What is your opinion of, you know, the mindsets of people now? Are they eager to sell or eager to hold?
My thing is that people will be more inclined to hold, because there is strong holding power. Because if you have purchased a property in like the last 2-3 years, right, there has been a property price increase. So even if interest rate goes up, right, there's still a possibility of refinancing out the loan, more capital, and then using it to service for the monthly installment. So it's not a big problem.
Wow. Okay. Good news day today. Sounds like. For the HDB market, I think on your website as well at iQuadrant, it says that you guys are about this journey that people take from HDB to landed, right? You want to help them on that journey too. There's a lot of debate over BTO resale. Do you think, where do you stand on this? Should your property journey always start with BTO?
So I feel that to talk about BTO, right, it's also good to talk talk about resale first, about for HDB. Because like when we look at the resale HDB, right, what happened is that during the start of COVID, right, there was a huge demand for more space because everyone realized that, oh, maybe we need an additional room for Zooming, like to work from home, right? And because of this, right, one thing to know about real estate, right, is that it's not possible to build a property in 1 month. It's just like having a baby. You can't have like 9 wives, right, to have 1 kid today. Mm-hmm. In a month, you need to have 1 wife and 9 months or 10. So in short, right, there is a...
It takes time, yeah.
Yeah, it takes time for supply to come online.
Yeah.
So my take is that this whole resale HDB prices went up because of this strong demand for space. And when as time passed, right, it's not a sustainable growth. Like you mentioned, like the 1.56
5-room flat.
Yeah, with all the 8 numbers, right? Mm-hmm. It's definitely either a Chinese buyer or a Chinese seller with all the 8s. But okay, so that's our point. But the point is, right?
Or it could be someone just likes 8s.
Yeah, that's true.
You never know.
Yeah. Well, the point is, right, if we look at the resale HDB, right, my take is that the property prices will come down with more supply coming online because HDB is meant to be an affordable housing for our population.
Mm.
So having said that, right, given the choice between BTO and resale, I'll go for BTO.
At the same time, I think it's not easy to wait for BTO.
That's a great point.
Yeah. So the dream is to own a BTO, and of course in 5 years' time, everyone know how much you can probably make if you sell it, right? But then again, we can't always just look at the government projects like this, like the housing market, as a perverse way of investment, because at the end of the day, they're just meant to provide affordable homes for people to mm-hmm. start their family.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a big crucial factor that people need to look at. So yes, we advocate the idea of upgrading, but at the same time, there are just some people who are really tight financially, and if they keep going to this upgrading curve, right, all they can see is just paying mortgage and suffering for mortgage payment. So without a proper plan, that would be a dangerous move if you are just being hyped up to keep upgrading.
What are some strategies in this proper plan you could be thinking through if you want to move from HDB to private, in your opinion?
I'll say that as someone like me who are entrepreneur, right, we really need to think about spare cash. But if you have a very stable career, or like a civil servant, right, then you should consider upgrading your home asset because you know that you're stable, you know that the check is coming in. I think that's very important. So number one, if you do not have fundamentally stability in your career, it's a very dangerous move to stretch every dollar just to make sure that you profit in this real estate journey.
That's a very good point of view. Let's talk about loans. We're all about Money FM here. If you can pay off the entire property, should we be doing so? What is your view?
100% no.
Yeah, definitely not. Right?
100% no?
100% no. Yeah. So if you're looking at like interest rate loans, right, 3% is still considered very cheap rate to borrow money. So if you look at it in another perspective, right, is that if I have some capital and I can only generate 3% return on my cash, right, it's too little. So it's either I don't know enough and I need to get myself better, whether by studying YouTube or like reading up, right, or I need to ask for some advice, okay? So what's my point over here? So my target is that I need to be making at least like 6% to like 15% on my money. So if I can borrow at 3% and make more than 3, right, I actually make the difference. Yeah, so in this case, right, I will take the loan because any dollar that I fully pay off my property, right, it means that I'm actually inversely taking on the loan on my property itself. So borrowing at 3% is very cheap.
I mean, a lot of people don't understand that you can't really refinance your HDB. So can you imagine if you sink in like $300,000 into a HDB, right, thinking that, oh, you pay off a debt, but if you need the money in the next month, right, actually you're stuck. So paying off debt is a subjective thing. And also, of course, if you are wealthy, you have a lot of good saving, right, sure. But for a lot of us, we are still really trying to get to that 2 million, 4 million retirement mark of cash, right? And maximizing that return is way more important than just being debt-free, because debt-free is not financially free, right? My daughter is debt-free, right? But she's not financially free. Like, she's taking money from me every month from her food and stuff like that. So that's a huge difference, right?
Is there a complaint?
No, that's a blessing.
That's very interesting, because most people are like, oh, I just want to get rid of this debt. It keeps me up at night. If I can pay it off, then I'll start investing.
What's keeping up at night will be like when they are in their 60s and they have struggled with like inflation, right? I think that's a scarier nightmare in the future.
Right.
Gonna take some delayed gratification, you know, and you know, punch fear in the face for that and get used to having mortgage, right?
You got to beat inflation as well, though, right?
Right. Mm. Think about that at 60, 70 years old, right? So I think that would be a bigger fear for me.
It sounds like you've got a revenue stream right there already. You got one daughter?
I got two responsibility. Let's not call it liability. Yeah.
All right. What missteps should investors...
Multiple streams of expenses.
For now, which turns into revenue when they grow up and start earning money. Missteps that investors should be wary about when they're investing in property.
So we can use 2024 to be more precise. I think that you really need to stop rushing to a new launch site right now, because there'll be 37 projects launched this year. The market will be flooded with supply. You can take a step back to really look at what's available and really make more informed choice than to be rushed to the showroom, queue up for the number, pressure to buy something. Right?
Yes.
So to me, at 2024, it's a time whereby you can really take your time to analyze what's best for you. And because there will be people who are still worried and didn't know and don't listen to your radio station about those interest rate environment that's coming up, right? So they are panicking, selling, they're more worried, right? So I do see that there'll be people who are making wrong move, which means there'll be opportunity for people who are more stable, who really take their time to understand the market.
Wow, take your time. I was just discussing this yesterday. We were at a Global Outlook, Investment Outlook seminar. And, you know, we were discussing, where can you park your money so that you can be paid to watch the rates fall, right? Isn't that a great idea to do? Do you have an answer?
So our classic saying is that you can't really fight inflation, right? Inflation is a part of life, right? But more importantly, real estate is an asset that actually goes with inflation. So why we think that real estate is a big part of our investment is because look at what happened over the last 3 years, right? I mean, if you are a real estate owner or investor, you actually ride along inflation rate. Inflation rate is not against you, but with you as well. So hence to us, holding cash, like we say, being debt-free, right, can be slightly more dangerous than anything, right? That you know, they're just holding it, thinking that, oh, I just want to save. I don't want to be investing in things that I want to pay for mortgage. And those are more dangerous moves because you are always on the other side of inflation, which is the negative side, right? Because your savings is just going to get smaller. So keeping ourselves in the market, I think that's very important.
My opinion is also, if you are looking at REITs or real estate, right, this is a good way to profit from the lowering of interest rate. Because if you're thinking about it, right, a REIT is also about rental. Like the rental may be the same, but as your cost, which is the interest, goes down, right, then you're taking more profit. Yeah. So if you figure a way, right, to how to get more from the lowering interest rate, that is the key.
Oh, we have to go to the news, but before we let you go, can you each share maybe one thing you want listeners to know about the state of Singapore's property market right now, according to your point of view, just before you leave? Go ahead, Ivan.
I'll go very micro. I'll say that when looking at real estate, we should not be buying 69 square meters. Why? Because recently there was ruling that for properties that 70 square meters or more for private properties, right, you can rent out to like 8 packs instead of 6. But if you miss it just by 1 square meter and you're 69, right, you can only rent to 6 people.
That's a huge point, yeah.
Yeah, so really, I think the definition of a big property versus a small have arrived.
Narrowed. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I'm trying to buy a new property or buying a resale property, right, the one thing to look out for, don't go for the 69 square meters.
Excellent point. Benny?
I think a lot of people is going to come up with more and more reasons why you should buy real estate this year, including us, right? I think what you should do is to take a step back and look at really your finances. Can you pay for the mortgage? Because there'll be that 3 months that they might have vacancy. So you must have spare cash to think through, and then you might get to financial freedom.
All right. The way these two guys in front of me clearly are.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Benny Ong is CEO of iQuadrant. Ivan Chai is founder and head of research at iQuadrant. You can find out more about what they do, these folks, at their website, iQuadrant.com.
iQuadrant.com.
That's it.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio, at the App Store and Google Play.